Jared struggled back to his feet and stumbled over to Sagan, who was on her knees, wiping her mouth from vomiting. He grabbed her arm and tried to pull her up.
"Come on," Jared said. "We have to get up. We have to hide."
"What?" Sagan coughed and spat and looked up at Jared.
"What's going on?"
"We're cut off," Jared said.
"It's happened to me before, when I was at Covel. The Oban are blocking us from using our brain pals."
"How?" Sagan yelled the question too loudly.
"I don't know,"
Jared said. Sagan stood up.
"It's Bhutan," she said groggily. "He told them how. Must have."
"Maybe,"
Jared said. Sagan wobbled slightly. Jared steadied her and came around to face her.
"We have to move, Lieutenant," he said. "If the Oban are blocking us, that means they know we're here. They're coming for us. We have to get our people up and moving."
"We have more people coming," Sagan said.
"Have to..."
She stopped and straightened, as if something cold and horrible had just washed over her.
"Oh, my God," she said.
"Oh, my God."
She looked up into the sky.
"What is it?"
Jared asked, and looked up, scanning for the telltale subtle ripples of camouflaged parachutes. It took him a second to realize he didn't see any. It took him another second to realize what it meant.
"Oh, my God,"
Jared said. Alex Rentkin's first guess was that he managed to lose his tight beam connection with the rest of the platoon. "Well, shit," he thought, and shifted his position, spread-eagling and spinning a few times to let the tight beam receiver seek out and locate the other members of the platoon, letting his brain pal extrapolate their positions based on where they had been on their last transmission. He didn't need to find them all. Just one would do nicely, and then he would be reconnected, reintegrated. Nothing. Rentkin pushed his concerns away. He had lost tight beam before. Only once, but once was enough to know it happened. He had reconnected when he made it to ground then. He'd do it again this time. He didn't have any more time to waste on it anyway because he was coming up on deployment altitude. They were deploying as low as possible to cover their tracks, so when to deploy was a matter of some precision. Rentkin checked his brain pal to determine his altitude, and it was then he realized that for the last minute he'd had no contact with his brain pal at all. Rentkin spent 10 seconds processing the thought. It refused to process. Then tried again, and this time his brain not only refused to process it, but pushed back against it, expelling it violently, knowing the consequences of accepting the thought as truth. He attempted to access his brain pal once, and then again, and then again, and then again, and then again, each time fighting back a sense of panic that fed on itself exponentially. He called out inside his head. No one answered.
No one had heard him. He was alone.
Alex Rentkin lost most of his mind then, and for the rest of his fall, twisted and kicked and tore at the sky, screaming with a voice he used so rarely that some small, disassociated part of his brain marveled at the sound of it in his skull. His parachute did not deploy. It, like nearly every physical object and mental process Rentkin used, was controlled and activated by his brain pal, a piece of equipment that had been so reliable for so long that the Colonial Defense Forces had simply stopped thinking of it as equipment and considered it as a given, like the rest of the brain and the soldier's physical body. Rentkin plummeted past the deployment line, unknowing, uncaring, and insensate to the implications of passing through that final barrier. It wasn't the knowledge that he was going to die that had driven Rentkin insane. It was being alone, separated, unintegrated for the first time and the last time in the 6 years he had been alive. In that time, he had felt the lives of his platoon mates in every intimate detail, how they fought, how they fucked, every moment that they lived, and the moment when they died. He took comfort in knowing he was there in their final moments, and that others would be there for him in his. but they wouldn't be. And he wouldn't be there for them. The terror of his separation was matched by the shame of not being able to comfort his friends, who were plunging to the same death as he was. Alex Rentgen twisted again, faced the ground that would kill him, and screamed the scream of the abandoned. Jared watched in dread as the pinwheeling gray dot above him appeared to gain speed in the final few seconds, and, revealed as a screaming human, ground into the meadow with a sickening splashy thud, followed by a horrifying bounce. The impact shocked Jared out of immobility. He shoved Sagan, screaming at her to run, and ran toward the others, hauling them up and shoving them toward the tree line, trying to make them get out of the way of the falling bodies. Seaborg and Harvey had recovered, but were staring at the sky, watching their friends die. Jared pushed Harvey and slapped Seaborg, yelling at both of them to move. Wigner refused to move and lay there, seemingly catatonic. Jared picked him up and handed him to Seaborg and told him to move. He reached down for Manly. She pushed him away and began crawling toward the meadow, screeching. She picked herself up and ran as bodies tore apart on impact around her. 60 meters out, she stopped, turned around rapidly, and screamed away the rest of her sanity. Jared turned away and missed seeing the leg of the body that fell next to her clip her on the neck and shoulder, crushing arteries and bones and driving shattered ribs into her lungs and heart. Manly's scream clipped off with a grunt. From the first hit, it took only 2 minutes for the rest of 2nd Platoon to hit the ground. Jared and the rest of his squad watched from the tree line as they fell. When it was over, Jared turned to the 4 remaining members of the squad and took stock. All of them seemed to be in varying stages of shock, with Sagan being the most responsive and Wigner the least, although he finally seemed aware of his surroundings. Jared felt sick, but was otherwise functioning. He had spent enough time out of integration that he could function without it. For the moment, at least, he was in charge. He turned to Sagan.
"We need to move," he said.
"Into the trees, away from here."
"The mission,"
Sagan began.
"There is no mission anymore," Jared said. "They know we're here. We're going to die if we stay."
The words seemed to help clear Sagan's head.
"Someone needs to go back," she said.
"Take the capture pod. Let the CDF know." She looked directly at him.
"Not you."
"Not me," Jared agreed. He knew she said it because she was suspicious of him, but he didn't have time to worry about it. He couldn't go back because he was the only one who was entirely functional.
"You go back,"
he suggested to Sagan.
"No,"
Sagan said. Flat. Final.
"Seaborg, then," Jared said.
Next after Sagan, Seaborg was the most functional. He could tell the CDF what had happened and tell them to prepare for the worst.
"Seaborg,"
Sagan agreed.
"Okay," Jared said, and turned to Seaborg. "Come on, Steve. Let's get you in this thing."
Seaborg wobbled over and began removing foliage from the capture pod to get to the door, moved to open the entry, and then stopped.
"What is it?"
Jared said.
"How do I open this?"
Seaborg said, his voice squeaky from non-use.
"Use your..."
"Fuck," Jared said. The capture pod opened via BrainPal.
"Well, this is just fucking perfect,"
Seaborg said, and slumped angrily next to the pod. Jared moved to Seaborg, and then stopped and cocked his head. In the distance, something was coming closer, and whatever it was not worried about sneaking up on them.
"What is it?"
Sagan said.
"Someone's coming," Jared said. "More than one. The Oban. They found us."
Chapter 12. They managed to elude the Oban for half an hour before they were cornered. The squad would have been better off separating, drawing the pursuing Oban in several directions, and opening up the possibility of one or more of its number slipping away at the sacrifice of the others. but they stayed together, compensating for the lack of integration by staying in each other's sight. Jared led the way at first, Sagan taking up the rear to drag along Wigner. Somewhere along the way, Jared and Sagan traded roles, Sagan taking them largely north, away from the Oban pursuing them. A distant whine became louder. Jared looked up through the tree canopy and saw an Oban aircraft pacing the squad and then heading north. Ahead, Sagan skipped to the right and headed east. She had heard the aircraft as well. A few minutes later, a second aircraft appeared and paced the squad again, dropping down to about 10 meters above the canopy. There was an immense rattle and branches fell and exploded around them. The Oban had opened fire. Sagan skidded to a stop as huge caliber slugs blew up dirt directly in front of her. That was that for going east. The squad turned north. The aircraft turned and paced them, offering bullets when they lagged or when they deviated too far to the east or west. The aircraft wasn't giving chase. It was herding them efficiently toward an unknown destination. That destination appeared 10 minutes later when the squad emerged into another, smaller meadow, this one with the Oban who had been in the first aircraft waiting for them. Behind them, the second aircraft was preparing to land. Behind that, the initial group of Oban, who had never been far behind, was now becoming visible through the trees. Wigner, still not entirely recovered from the mental trauma of being unplugged, pushed away from Jared and raised his MP, apparently determined not to go out without a fight. He sighted in at the group of Oban waiting for them in the meadow and yanked at the trigger. Nothing happened. To keep the MP from being used against CDF soldiers by their enemies, the MP required a BrainPal verification to fire. It got none. Wigner snarled in frustration, and then everything above his eyebrows disappeared as a single shot took off the top of his head. He collapsed. In the distance, Jared could see an Oban soldier lowering a weapon. Jared, Sagan, Harvey, and Seaborg came together, drew their combat knives, and put their backs to each other, each facing a different direction. Drawing their knives was a futile gesture of defiance. None of them pretended to imagine that the Oban needed to get within an arm's reach to kill them all. Each took some small comfort in knowing they'd die within arm's reach of each other. It wasn't integration, but it was the best they could hope for. By this time, the second aircraft had landed. From inside the craft, 6 Oban emerged, 3 carrying weapons, 2 with other equipment, and 1 empty-handed. The empty-handed one swayed over to the humans in the Oban's peculiarly graceful gait, and stopped a prudent distance away, its back covered by the 3 weapon-wielding Oban. Its blinking multiple eyes appeared to fix on Sagan, who was closest to it.
"Surrender," it said, in sibilant but clear English.
Sagan blinked.
"Excuse me?" she said.
As far as she knew, the Oban never took prisoners.
"Surrender," it said again. "You will die if you do not."
"You will let us live if we surrender," Sagan said.
"Yes," the Oban said.
Jared glanced over to Sagan, who was to his right. He could see her chewing over the offer. The offer looked good to Jared. The Oban might kill them if they surrendered, but they would definitely kill them if they didn't. He didn't offer the opinion to Sagan. He knew she didn't trust him or want to hear his opinion about anything. "Drop your weapons," Sagan said, finally. Jared dropped his knife and unslung his MP. The others did likewise. The Oban also had them remove their packs and belts, leaving only their unitards. A couple of the Oban who had been in the original group pursuing them came over and picked up the weapons and equipment and hauled them back to the airship. When one walked in front of Harvey, Jared could feel him tense up. Jared suspected Harvey was trying very hard not to kick it. Their weapons and equipment removed, Jared and the others were made to stand apart from each other while the two Oban bearing equipment waved said equipment over each of them, searching, Jared suspected, for hidden weapons.